Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. Welcome again to the Plant Cunning Podcast. In this episode, we speak with Mason Hutchinson of Herb Rally, and we're going to talk about Herb Rally, what he does, some of the courses he offers, and frugal nutrition, how to stay healthy on a budget, a lot of other interesting things. Before we get to it, I want to remind folks that we have tickets up for the Plant Cutting Conference, which is July 26th through 28th this year at our small farm in central New York, in person. We have some amazing speakers, including Pam Montgomery, Seven Song, Rebecca Beyer, Lisa Fazio, Michael Bryan, and Joanna Farrar, many others. And it's going to be a fantastic time. So make sure you get your tickets at plantcunningconference.com as soon as you can before they sell out. That is the goal. So also, I'm still offering Vedic astrology readings. Email me at info@plantcunning.com and I will get you scheduled. We also appreciate all likes, subscribes, comments, 5-star ratings, all those kind of things. We really appreciate that and we appreciate you for listening. So I hope you enjoy the episode.
I love seeing how the sausage is made.
I know.
Right, we'll put that in. So today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are honored to have Mason Hutchinson. And Mason is the founder, co-owner of Herb Rally, which is a platform for herbal and health conscious community. And they do a lot of like saying what all the events are happening in the herbal community. There's a podcast, a fantastic podcast. You do a lot of interviews, mm-hmm. and also an educational platform. So Mason, how are you today?
Doing really good. I'm actually here dog sitting. So cool. Had a fantastic morning, hung out on the Fox River here in Appleton, Wisconsin. So it's just been a chill morning, took the dog for a walk and yeah, just enjoying life. How are you two?
We're doing well.
Pretty good. It's sunny. It's spring again.
Yeah, we had a big fire yesterday in the woods with a lot of the brush. Isaac's been taking down some of the ash and elm trees. And so it was really nice to just sort of hang out by the fire for a couple hours. And now we have a bunch of coal.
Biochar. Yeah.
I saw you post about that on your Instagram account.
Yeah, we did another burn yesterday.
Yeah, we've got a few more burns to do.
Yeah.
There's just so much, like we're cutting all these ash trees, so they're, to clean up the apple orchard.
So it's like a fun spring activity.
So Mason, usually when we start this show, we ask first-time guests, what brought you to the plant path? So how about it?
Definitely. So I would say I got into herbalism and the plant path by way of nutrition. In my early years, I would say I was kind of a sad kid, pretty depressed. And I would say I found out in my late teens that what you put in your body actually has an effect on your mind. I'm sure that's pretty obvious for a lot of your listeners, but I didn't know that at the time. So I started becoming pretty obsessive about nutrition and exercise and stuff like that. Me and my friend, we were like lifting a lot of weights and stuff, so we kind of had that angle of nutrition as well. And then I remember we went to the Red Barn in Eugene, Oregon, which is my hometown, and I saw some hoshuwu and romania root and astragalus root, and we just started getting into traditional Chinese medicine. And so that was kind of like the gateway, like the traditional Chinese medicine, the Ayurveda angle. And then it just became, you two know how it goes, you just start becoming super obsessed with it. It's just really fun to get into. And so, yeah, I would say really it was by way of nutrition, just to kind of like help my mind out. Yeah.
So what kind of foods did you find were most helpful?
Interesting. Yeah. So I would say I was pretty standard American diet most of my early life. And then I was a blossoming hippie. I started thinking, oh, I should start eating organic foods. And then I sometimes tend to have like an extreme personality. So I started becoming a vegetarian. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to be a vegan. Okay, I'm going to be a raw vegan. And then I started fasting a bunch. And then I even started dabbling in fruitarianism. I started thinking breatharianism was pretty sexy. And I just kind of took it to this like extreme degree And I think a lot of us kind of have that experience, you know, when you first start really getting into nutrition. And I'm an omnivore now, but as far as like particular foods, I don't necessarily can pinpoint any particular diet or food. I'm really thankful to have had that experience of like extremism. I'm a lot more like 80-20 principles now with my diet. I try not to be super obsessive about anything or dogmatic, because also during like, I'd say my raw vegan phase, I was probably overly judgmental of other people and their choices and everything. But yeah, I do value that period of my time because it kind of, it taught me a lot. But yeah, I would say just the overall experience was extremely beneficial for me. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, totally. It sounds like it's like the switch from like processed, like traditional American diet to like vegetables and whole foods, like really was a transformation. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you really got to go off into the extreme to like define the balance point too.
Totally.
And, you know, I mean, fasting and I think that, you know, raw veganism and fasting are all really good to do for a period of time, you know, cleans everything out.
Absolutely. And that's definitely how it felt for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you learn about like factory farms for the first time and like, you know, animals, like it's hard not to go vegan. I feel like most of us have gone through that like cycle of like, oh my gosh.
That's a great point. And it wasn't necessarily purely from a dietary standpoint for me. It was also, I was trying to stick up for the animals, you know, and that was a huge portion of it for me. And, you know, what was that one book? Fast Food Nation. I read a bunch of like Michael Pollan's work, and I definitely went down that rabbit hole as well.
Yeah. And I love that you have a whole course on your website called Frugal Nutrition. So it's still a part of your life, and you and Amanda, you've talked about like cooking healthy dinners together and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about Frugal Nutrition and what the modules are and what people can find if they sign up for that course?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we called it the Art of Frugal Nutrition because frugalnutrition.com was already taken. And you know, when you have those ideas and you think you're original in it, but then you find out other people are all doing this too.
Yeah.
So really it's just Frugal Nutrition is combining two of my favorite things, which is eating healthy and not spending money. And so I always thought Frugal Nutrition was going to be a book. And just like Herb Rally, I had this idea, lived in my head forever. I kept thinking that it had to be this perfect finished product before I put it out into the world. And I thought it was going to be a book. Then I realized, oh wait, there's the internet, and I have, you know, all these relationships with all these great nutritionists and herbalists and all that. So I realized, oh, I could just make this into a course. We actually made a sliding scale course. Really, it's free. People could register for free. And so we started with three modules. We went down to Southern Oregon and hung out with, do you know Kirsten Shockey?
No.
So she's awesome. She's written a bunch of books with her husband on fermentation, because to me, like, fermented foods is one of the cheapest ways to get nutrition, especially if you're just making your own homemade sauerkraut. Because what does a jar of organic sauerkraut cost at a Whole Foods? You know, it's like $13 for a little jar, right? But if you make it yourself, it's way cheaper. So fermentation definitely was a pillar for me. We also had our good friend Giuseppe Spadafora. He came and visited us in Eugene when we were living there at the time. And he did a whole module on dumpster diving, because you really can't get cheaper than dumpster diving. I mean, you can't get cheaper than free is what I should say. And he's not teaching you he wasn't teaching us in that module how to like go to Best Buy and find, you know, computer parts and sell them on the black market or whatever. What he was teaching us how to do was to find safe and healthy foods in dumpsters. And we actually do that in the module. We actually go to an unknown location. I won't spill the beans here on the podcast, but there's lots of places to dumpster dive. And we got a bounty of probably, I don't know, $50 worth of organic produce that was all fine. It was just, you know, past their expiration day, or it was slightly bruised or whatever. And Amanda and I made some beautiful meals out of that. I remember we got some kale from that harvest, and I made like kind of like this Asian inspired sweet savory type kale dish, and Amanda to this day says that trash kale was my favorite meal you've ever made.
That's so cool.
Dumpstering has also been a big part of our life.
Yeah.
I love hearing that. That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, my mom would take us dumpstering when I was like a teenager, and I was so embarrassed. And she told me, one day you'll think this is cool. And then when I found like $300 worth of brie in the dumpster, I was like, this is cool.
Yeah.
You always end up coming back around. I remember when I was a kid, we would go to like Goodwill and St. Vincent de Paul, and I was always scared that my friends would see me in there, like because, we'd be buying used clothes or whatever. But then I was like, well, if they're in here too, no big deal. But yeah, it's so funny how we think about that stuff. But our third module was bone broth
Oh, bone broth. Cool.
with Jade Alessandro. And that's another thing where it's basically free nutrition, because if you think about people just tossing the scraps of their veggies, tossing the bones, you could just use a little water and some thyme, and boom, you got some of the most nutritious foods around.
Yeah, and it's easy to boost your bone broth too with some like reishi or astragalus or herbs and garlic and all of that too. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, we sneak in some reishi mushroom slices, not too many, but definitely astragalus as well on the regular.
Yeah, awesome.
So.
Yeah, it's a nice bone broth is nice when you first wake up in the morning. Like it sounds a little weird, but it feels so good in your body to just like sip on a warm cup of bone broth, you know?
Oh yeah, we'll throw in a little miso sometimes, and yeah,
Yes. Again
just
with the
elevate
firmament.
it. Exactly. So I'm yet to make my own miso. I haven't done that yet, but I definitely want to get into that.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a process.
We did it once at an herb farm I
Really?
used to live at, and yeah, we made a big batch of it, and we couldn't go through it before the top started to mold, so we made like a 5 gallon bucket of miso, so it was just too much, but yeah, it's a cool process.
Yeah, did you have to toss the whole thing because of the mold at the top, or?
I think we ended up scraping a lot of it off and then just like not feeling great about it because it was like so
Totally.
moist, soft and moist. We figured it probably did leach down into it. So, yeah.
It's sad, but those are the learning experiences,
Exactly. It was like the
and
first
the art
time.
of frugal nutrition. Did you want to hear about the other modules as well? Because we also have Bevan Clare's The Spice Apothecary. And so Bevan Clare is an herbalist. She wrote a book called The Spice Apothecary, and she talked all about different ways you could use spices as food and medicine, and also how a lot of what you have in your kitchen is herbal medicine and nutrition. And of course, it's also super cheap. And going back to the whole dogmatic comment, you don't have to have like organic this, organic that. You could have just a standard oregano, dried oregano that you get from the supermarket, and it doesn't have to be, perfect every time.
I love those three modules. Like those are all really great ideas. The ferments, the finding, sourcing free food, and using what you have in your spice rack for medicine. Those are awesome.
We also have Eat Your Weeds with Shayna Lipner Grover, and it's a very introductory, it's like a 30-minute module on that one. But yeah, again, like it's kind of like free food. We want to produce more modules in the future, like say urban foraging's a big passion of mine. I love that whole concept. And then we also have nourishing herbal infusions, which I wanted to have be like one of the first ones we did, but we just produced that with a wonderful herbalist named Bridget Dougherty based in Maine. So, and that's a 3.5 hour module where she covers like 15 plants, how to make it, the frugality, just all the ins and outs of everything you'd want to know in nourishing herbal infusions.
Fantastic. Yeah. Such a great way of getting more nutrients for free in your body is to go outside and find some of these plants that have tons of minerals and vitamins and get them in your body.
Amen.
Yeah, and you can make a what you could do eventually is you could forage the herbs, make a bone broth from dumpster chicken, then add some spices from your cabinet, make a bone broth herbal infusion, and then ferment it. I don't know, you can't really ferment it,
No.
but you could add
Yeah, you
some
can do all of the above.
add fermented, add miso.
Yeah, you could add some fermented miso.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are all
Totally.
real, those are fantastic cornerstones to a frugal nutritional life. Yeah, for sure. That's a cool class, cool course.
Yeah, we just want to keep expanding on it. We call it ever expanding, sliding scale. We haven't released a new lesson in a bit. I want to say the nourishing herbal infusions one came out a few months ago. We were on a road trip in Oakland or down through California, and when we stopped in Oakland, unfortunately, our memory cards were stolen.
Oh
And we actually had
no.
a class in there with Paul Bergner on nutrient dense foods. So we're gonna redo that at some point as well.
You should also, are you going to do a beans and rice module?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Beans and rice and beans. I mean, yeah, it's so so filling, so nutritious, so cheap. Yeah, I'm on board with that. I definitely lived off that in my early 20s for sure.
Yeah.
I'm coming back around to like rice, just white rice a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just like so inexpensive and it fills you up. And it's so, compared to any other grain, it's not allergenic at all. It doesn't cause any problems. But are there any other like tips or tricks that you found in your life for like frugal nutrition or like
favorite meals that you make still? Or
yeah, I mean, I would say we do eat a lot of like, say, whole chickens, where you know you could get so many different meals out of it. Going to the rice thing though, my daughter loves it when I do this. I'll toast the rice on the in the pan for a bit, and then I'll throw in some spices while I do that. A lot of times I'll do turmeric curry. What else do I throw in there? I'll throw in like paprika in there, and just like let it toast for a bit, and then I'll add the water or the bone broth. And you know, after 20 minutes, like it's just super flavor rich. And again, like my daughter absolutely adores that meal. I do have a bunch of notes somewhere I could pull up, but if you want me to. But I've got a running like list of all these different ideas of things that I want to do.
I've never tried toasting rice. I've tried like toasting quinoa and hullus oats. Hullus oats are really yummy. They're kind of like what you feed to the horses, but they're like a nice chewy whole grain. So I've tried toasting that. I'll have to try that with the rice. That's awesome.
We also eat like a lot of oatmeal, overnight oats, that kind of thing. I'll even do like savory oatmeal where I will cook it with more savory ingredients, including bone broth as well. I mean, a lot of times people are like, oh, I never thought that you could make oatmeal into a savory dish, but there's no reason why you can't.
Why not?
Yeah. And then also making rice into a sweet dish.
You can like do that too.
Rice pudding.
Oh, good point. Yeah, you go the opposite. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So Herb Rally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it actually with your courses, but what is it? How did it come to be?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this or not, but I was the events person for Mountain Rose Herbs for over a decade. And early in my career there, I was looking for a website that listed all of the herbalism events that happened in the community. And what I noticed was a lot of the websites did list, say, like the big conferences, International Herb Symposium, American Herbalist Guild Symposium, Midwest Women's Herbal Conference, and all the above. But I never found a website where they listed, say, like the little talk in some tiny town at the library, or the plant walk that I went on at Mount Pisgah in Eugene. And those have been super beneficial in my early learning journey. They still are, but like, I wanted to help expose those events to people that were looking for them, because unless you see, say, the flyer at the coffee shop, you're not going to know about them. So I wanted like a hub that listed all of the herbalism events all over the country. We actually list virtual herbalism events as well as international. Of course, though, like the US space, because that's where I live, is the most robust. But I wanted to create a website where it just listed all of those events. And we've been listing herbalism events for the community since 2015 now. So coming up this May, that'll be what, nine years. So it kind of just came to be just out of my own, like, you know, I created what I wanted to see exist in the world, if you will.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, yeah. So helpful to have that resource for the herbalists. And it's cool to just see, like, scroll through the events, even if you're not in like the region that you're seeing, you like learn about a new herbalist that is doing something cool there. So
I love hearing that, AC. And I also, another thing I love about it is, I don't know if this actually ever happened. I'm hoping it has, but let's say you are scrolling through so for the listener, we separate it by all events where you could just look chronologically. And then we also separate by state to make it easier for you if you live in that particular state. But what you were talking about, AC, is looking at all events. Mm-hmm. And what I love is, what if someone was looking through that list and they saw, oh, I'm going to go to California, I should just time it with this plant walk or this class.
Yeah.
And then they kind of base their vacation or their trip around going to that particular class. Yeah. I always just fantasize and hope that that's what happens sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Yeah, it's really cool.
For the more nomadic folks, you could do a whole like tour across the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
herb conferences and classes and yeah.
That's what I'm going to do when I'm, you know, like 70 years old. I'm just going to go to all the events, travel all around. And yeah, that's definitely a dream.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So Herb Rally now is a lot more than that too. So you have the courses, you have podcast. How did that come to be? And what is the full extent of what Herb Rally is now?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with Herb Rally. I would say early in my herbal journey, I was really into the Herbmenter Radio hosted by John Gallagher. And now he has a co-host, Tara Ruth. But back in the day, I want to say it was probably 2011, I was listening obsessively, sometimes to the episodes 2-3 times, you know, and I felt like I really got to know the herbalists. And I just really always loved the idea of podcasts. I love listening to podcasts. And I was like, you know what? Herb Rally does. And that's why I'm glad, because when I first started the website, I was like, it's going to be called herbalismevents.com. And I was like, that's really lame and boring. And I thought Herb Rally just had a nice sound to it, but I didn't pigeonhole myself to just the events. Right. So I thought, you know, maybe someday I'll start a podcast. And so I did. In 2017, I had the idea where I didn't have to be a host because I was incredibly timid. I did not want to put myself out there. I was still kind of consider myself kind of a behind the scenes type of person. So what I did was I would reach out to herbalists and say, hey, do you want to, you know, publish a lesson and then promote your stuff, your school, whatever. And I remember the first episode we had was Katya Swift and Rin Madura, and it was how to run a free herb clinic. And that was episode one way back in 2017. And throughout the years, we just published more and more episodes like that where we would promote people's events. Sometimes I would even pay people to create lessons specifically for the podcast. Sometimes conferences would send me audio from there, like say that, what's one? The Medicines from the Earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to say that's maybe in North Carolina. They submitted some audio, and then I would always do like the pre-roll ads where I'd promote their conference. And even that was like a huge thing for me. It was like, oh shit, I don't want to, you know, hear my voice on the radio or whatever. But I kind of, over the course of years, I kind of got over that. And then just last year, I worked up the nerve to actually host a show, which is called the Herbalist Hour now, which you two I interviewed last week on. And so, yeah, that's now 100 and maybe 105 episodes, 110 episodes doing the Herbalist Hour. And yeah, it's just kind of just like everything in Herb Rally fashion has kind of grown and expanded and hopefully improved.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I can definitely relate to that of not wanting to be like on camera, on screen. We started off our podcast just audio.
Oh.
And I really liked that of like, you know, being able to sort of sit back and, you know, not have my face.
Wait, ask that one next.
This one next. Yeah. Like kind of compare notes and be like, okay, are you going to ask this next? But
totally.
Now, you know, with the video, it's just like a totally different ball game. But I think with time and practice, it just gets easier. And Isaac does most of the editing, so I don't have to like look at my face and sound of my voice as much, which really helps. But yeah, any tips on like getting over stage fright of like being a public facing person? Because I bet there's a lot of shy herbalists out there who listen to this and maybe do want to start a class or a podcast.
Yeah, I love this question so much. What do you say, something, Isaac?
Or yeah, like do a plant walk, do a class at their library or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny you say that because I'm still working up the nerve just to do that. I was asked by Amanda to give a plant walk to like her friend's son the other day, and I was like, oh, I'm kind of nervous to do that. And it's funny too, because in all reality, when you go out in the woods with me, at least in the Northwest, because I know a lot of the plants there, if you go on a hike with me out there, it kind of just turns into a plant walk anyways. So I need to just get over that. It's definitely, I love what you said, AC. It really is just practice. But I will say just a little tip. This worked for me. Uh-huh. Remember Snapchat?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't know if that's still a thing, but I remember me and my friend group, we just started sending videos of ourselves instead of like text messages.
Yeah.
And at first it was very weird. And I remember the more I did it, the more I got used to seeing my face on the video. Mm-hmm. And so I would send video messages to my friends where it like kind of forced the replay back to you. And once you do that, you know, say hundreds of times to your friends, you start to get really used to hearing your voice, seeing your face on video, and then you become much more comfortable. So I would say maybe do Instagram DMs to your friends, you know, on video if you have Instagram. That's definitely a way to practice. The other thing is you just got to dive in. Can I read you a poem?
Oh, please. Yeah.
It's not by me. I'm going to pull this up right now. So do you remember Shel Silverstein?
Yeah.
Okay. He's my favorite poet of all time. Okay. So this one has been instrumental in my life for just doing things. How I told Amanda that I liked her, getting a job at Mountain Reserves, quitting Mountain Rose Herbs and doing Herb Rally full time. So this is Diving Board by Shel Silverstein. Your listeners are going to love this. I don't know. Okay, here we go. You've been up on that diving board, making sure that it's nice and straight. You've made sure that it's not too slick. You've made sure that it could stand the weight. You've made sure that the spring is tight. You've made sure that the cloth won't slip. You've made sure that it, You've made sure that it bounces right and that your toes can get a grip. And you've been up there since 5:30 doing everything but dive. So you're just spending your time up there like, oh, I'm going to do it. But eventually you just kind of have to do it. And if a super shy kid like me can work up the nerve to do it, I truly genuinely think anyone can do it. And sometimes you just got to do it. And you just start really small. Like, it doesn't have to be this grandiose thing. Just start somewhere and eventually you'll get better and better and better. And then you'll just be, you know, like us here, we're kind of just used to it now. I used to be so concerned about what people would think, like, oh, what if I say something wrong about some constituent in some plant? I'm like, who gives a shit? No one really cares. You know, people are a lot more graceful than you might realize. Yeah, so that's just a couple things I'm thinking about. Exactly. And then no big deal. You learn something. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Love that poem. And I love the idea of diving in and just doing it, because there's something about that moment before you do dive where it's like sort of that moment before you start like a psychedelic trip or something where you're oh my gosh, is this going to be the scariest thing ever? And then you move through it and you're like, okay, this is just the thing. And I'm in the learning process and here we go.
That's such a great analogy. Before therapy, also, I would say I'm going to dive in head first. I'm going, you know, if you're paying a therapist for their time, you might as well get the most out of it that you can. And so I kind of always approached it that way. Just give it your all. And I love the psychedelic idea too, because you're right. Like, there's no preparing for that. You know what's to come if you've done it before. So yeah, you just got to dive right in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, like taking a cold shower or
yeah,
anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just there is a muscle that you develop too about just doing something that you don't want to do and like not overthinking it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too easy to overthink it.
Yeah.
Isaac and AC, I think both of your muscles are analogies, because you both always have such good analogies for things.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've mentioned Mountain Rose, working for Mountain Rose several times now. Mm-hmm. So what was that like? How did you get into Mountain Rose? And what is Mountain Rose like? It's one of the biggest herb companies in the U.S. at least.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. When I first started working there, I think there was 110 employees. And then when I left, there was like 250. It was something like that. So it grew a lot when I was there. I'm not taking credit for that. But I would say, when I first started getting into herbalism, as I was mentioning, I was also really into nutrition. I was actually going to school with the goal of being a dietitian. Mm-hmm. And I was actually a dietitian aide at the hospital. I worked there for 7 years in Eugene. And Mountain Rose Herbs moved from Pleasant Hill to Eugene, Oregon, which is my hometown. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. This herb company that I started buying all these herbs from, I remember the Hoshubu I bought from the Red Barn was from Mountain Rose Herbs. And I needed a change in my life. I needed a direction, because I felt like I was kind of half-assing everything and just kind of floating around and not really actually setting a goal or doing anything. And when they moved to Eugene, I told myself, it's time to quit the cush hospital job, working with all my friends with great benefits, to go work for this herb company. And yeah, it was just, I remember they moved there. I applied and I got a job in customer service. And I was like, this is rad. I'm talking on the phone for 8 hours a day about these herbs that I love so much. So that was kind of like the origin of working there. I still didn't necessarily have a particular goal. I knew I wanted to do something, but yeah, that was just kind of how it all started for me.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And you moved on from doing customer service eventually to events.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that had an influence on your desire to make Herb Rally the events listing part of Herb Rally, at least.
Totally. So
what kind of things would they have you do for the events role that you had?
Yeah. So transitioning from customer service to the events gig, that was spearheaded by this event that we threw called Rootstock. It was a big like herb conference. It was basically a music festival. And I remember when I was in customer service, they gave me the role for the vendor coordinator. So I was basically interacting with all the different herbalists. And I just busted my ass that whole week. I want to say I worked like 90 hours while I was there. And it just so happened to coincide with the other event person leaving right after that event. And then they were like, Mason, you want the job? I was like, shit, yeah, I do. That's sweet. So yeah. Then I got thrust into the herb role. And basically what I would do is I would organize their event called the Free Herbalism Project, which at least back in the day, we would host twice a year. Eventually it became an online thing too. But yeah, I would go to herb conferences. I would go to natural foods trade shows. Basically I was organizing or had my finger on up to 100-ish events per year, sponsorships. And I probably attended 20 to 30 events per year, whether that was local or I would even, you know, fly to places. I'd go to Great Lakes Herb Fair and Good Medicine Confluence, all these different places. So yeah, it was anything related to events for Mountain Rose Herbs I was doing.
That's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So what do you like better, plants or plant people?
Ooh. you know, that's really funny you say that. I would say plant people, which is really funny. I think as I get older, I'll probably more go the plant side. But I know I've also said this a few times. I was always a shy kid. And now that I'm more outgoing and extroverted and less shy, I like really have this desire to build community and be a part of this community. And I still have that desire, as you could tell by my work with Herb Rally. But I do think that with getting older, with slowing down, I do suspect eventually it'll be more like out in nature and communing with the plants more. But I'm definitely in the phase of my life where I'm still super gung-ho about the herbal community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one thing that I love about herbalism is that it does connect both a passion for the plants and a passion for people, because it's like bringing people into the plant world. So as like a community oriented person, I think being an herbalist and herbal educator or grower and harvester and stuff, like, it really allows you to have like your love for both of those things come through. So
yeah, and don't get me wrong, I still love me some plants, and I'm excited to see spring popping up around here in Wisconsin. So yeah, absolutely. Best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So you've got to meet a lot of herbalists, mm-hmm. a lot of the
totally.
Real, like, people doing the work throughout mm-hmm. the country and in the world. So what have been some of your favorite interactions or like most interesting herb plant people moments?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, I kind of want to go back to that first plant walk. Keith Hess led a plant walk at Mount Pisgah. I want to say it was probably my first herb walk. And it was like, I want to say it was like 3 hours. And it just blew my mind. It's one thing to learn about herbs in books and online, but it's another thing to go out there and learn the plants in person. And not only that, but you're surrounded by other people with the same enthusiasm. So I guess you can't ever forget your first, if you will. The other thing is I got to shout out my OG herbal mentor, Howie Brownstein, and Stephen Yeager at the Columbine School of Botanical Studies, because they turned what I saw as the wall of green into building deep relationships with tons of different plants in the West Cascades, Pacific Northwest. So yeah, just that first plant walk and that first herbal apprenticeship is just mind-blowing for me.
What was that school like, the Columbine School?
Yeah, it was immersive. So the first year's, I took the 2-year apprenticeship. The first year is broken up in spring, summer, and you could take, I actually split them up because I just got a new job at Mountain Rose Herbs at the time. I became a dad for the first time, and I just basically started my new role as the events person for Mountain Rose Herbs. So I was just like juggling a lot. So I did split up spring, summer. You could take it all at once, but yeah, it's immersive. I want to say you're spending a couple days out in the field for, you know, from the morning until late afternoon, keying out plants. It's very botany heavy. It's very ecology heavy. So we're using the flora of the Pacific Northwest. We affectionately call it the Hitchcock. And you're learning how to key out plants in the field. You're learning the ecology that it grows in. And there's obviously a lot of herbalism in there as well. But yeah, I would say it's incredibly botany heavy. Definitely like teaches you how to wildcraft ethically. I know that's kind of a divisive subject in the herbal community, but I truly trust Howie and how he teaches wildcrafting. You can check out his wildcrafting checklist that he made up and or he created, I don't know, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And so yeah, that's kind of the gist of it, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you have any other herbal mentors or teachers or any other continuing studies that have inspired you on your own herbal education journey?
Yeah. So a couple of years after taking the Columbine School of Botanical Studies, I got that itch again. You know, you want to be back in the field. You want to be back around the plant people. So there's also a school in Portland, Oregon, called the Arctos School of Herbal and Botanical Medicine. And that's taught by Missy Rose and Grady Proctor. So yeah, after taking the two-year apprenticeship at Columbine's, I decided to take the Arctos School, and I would drive up, I want to say once every 3 weeks, I'd drive up to Portland, stay there and stay for the whole weekend because it was a weekend type of class. They have a more intensive one too, but yeah, I would definitely consider Missy and Grady as definitely herbal mentors of mine as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
You also, do you have a question or?
Yeah.
Okay. You also have traveled a bunch meeting different herbalists and herbal teachers and things like that. What inspired you to get on the road and start traveling?
Yeah, I don't know if you're referring to the fact that we bought an RV and then we started doing that whole thing, but we actually, after a year of doing that, we sold our RV and said, nope, that's not for us.
Okay.
But we do have some trips planned still, but really Herb Rally does not exist without all the other herbalists. Like, I barely consider myself an herbalist. Like, I've been in the community for so long now, but I'm not a clinical herbalist. I don't identify necessarily as a teacher. So really it's Herb Rally is dependent upon the other experts in the field. So plus I love hanging out with all of them. They're all amazing people. So yeah, we definitely want to travel as much as possible to get these classes that we have on Herb Rally. Zoom is also actually incredibly convenient and useful. And we've been doing more and more webinars and interviews like this. So that's super useful, but nothing beats being in person recording these classes.
Yeah.
You know,
and Amanda is an amazing photographer and like graphics person. And does she also like do the videography for the classes?
Yeah. Yep. Wow. She's super talented. She also worked at Mountain Rose Herbs for 4 years. That's actually how we met. And she was a photographer, videographer, and graphic artist for Mountain Rose Herbs. So yeah, super, super talented. Shout out Amanda.
Yeah. What a dream team.
I know, right? It kind of feels like we're doing very similar things that we were both doing at Mountain Rose Herbs, just kind of doing it for Herb Rally now. Yeah.
It's really nice. Cool. And again, it's like making that leap from like working at the comfortable job of like, working for someone else who pays you, tells you what to do, to like becoming a business owner and jumping off that diving board to like be responsible for your own self is like a really big step. So I'm glad that you did the leap because it's working out and you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Totally.
Oh, I just wanted to say too, I remember I had an online interaction with Isaac in the past couple of weeks. I don't know if you remember this, Isaac, but I commented on your post about the Plant Cunning Conference, which is coming up in July, right?
Or yeah, last weekend of July.
All right. So dear listener, go buy tickets to the Plant Cunning Conference this July in central New York. But I remember commenting on Isaac's post. I was like, that's so cool that you're doing it in person. And Isaac responded something like, yeah, you got to keep these in-person events alive, which I could not agree more.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. there's so many wonderful things about online courses. I mean, you get to study with people that you never would be able to otherwise.
Yeah.
And you can find, I mean, like with me studying Vedic astrology, I would not be able to study in this lineage, really.
Right.
Except for this time with the Zoom and with online courses. And there's so many classes like that. But at the same time, like being in person is just like with a plant walk, you can't taste and smell the plant online. You can't like really be in the ecosystem and get a feel for like where the plant grows and what other plants are around. And you know, like you could read a list or like maybe see some pictures, but it's just not the same at all, you know. But they're absolutely, you know, good to have both.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And it's a lot, in a way it's a lot easier to do things online. So yeah, it's you got to keep the in-person things going because because it is a little bit harder, but the rewards are, I think, a lot bigger.
Yeah, and we definitely people are craving the online or in-person, connection, because last year was our first year doing the conference and we sold out, had 125 people like fill our Big Red Barn. And as a first year event, we were just like, okay, here we go. This is, you know, people want this. So it's a lot of work. I'm still in recovery.
Totally. Me too.
And we're already planning the next one, but it's what the people want. And we we have such a cool barn space. It's like also what the barn wants.
Yeah. You got to fill that barn. And I love that you cap it too. And 125 person event is sometimes bigger is not always better. Sometimes a nice contained 125 people, that is such a good number to build deep bonds with these people that are attending the event.
Yeah,
it allows the attendee and presenter to get to interact a lot more too. But sorry, Isaac, I interrupted you.
Oh, we're gonna cap it at 200 this time, which I think will be a good number. Mm-hmm. But like the smaller conferences, you really do get a chance to meet. You get to see everybody who's there. It's not like there's people that you've never even interacted with at all, but you get to form much more deep connections with people. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I also want to plug Isaac's Vedic astrology thing too, real quick, because you mentioned it a second ago. And I got to say, dear listener, I did that with Isaac last week and I absolutely loved it. So if you're even thinking about it, if you're on the fence, definitely hit up Isaac. And right now it's donation based. So it's a great deal. And thank you so much for that reading, Isaac. That was awesome.
Thank you, Mason. That was
absolutely
awesome.
Yeah.
So Mason, what are you looking forward to with Herb Rally or with your own personal life right now? What are the things that are like most exciting for you? Or do you have any upcoming events or offerings that you want to share?
Yeah, there's a few. So something that's in the works is, and we're not really announcing it in full detail yet, but Amanda and I are actually creating a book. Like it's kind of like a very community, herbal community oriented and coffee table style situation. So that's about as much as I'll say about that. But we're hoping that'll be released in early 2025. So that's in the works, which come to think of it, I got to make my way out to New York at some point so we could all hang out and get you in a future edition of the book. That'd be awesome. Cool. But yeah, besides that, I need to really start taking Art of Frugal Nutrition again seriously because there's so many more modules I want to add to it as well. And yeah, I would say those are the main things. Am I forgetting anything? We constantly add to our member area, the Herb Rally Schoolhouse, but that's kind of just like an ongoing project that we continuously.
Oh yeah, what is the schoolhouse? We didn't even talk about the schoolhouse.
So yeah, the Herb Rally Schoolhouse is basically, it's our member area. It's one of the ways that we allow our listeners to support us financially. We have this idea to just continuously build an online library of herbal education in the Herb Rally Schoolhouse, and it's $10 a month. But the thing about that is there's so much free information on the internet that I'm like, you know, the way I look at the Herb Rally Schoolhouse is just if people want to have the means and are able to help support Herb Rally, that's how they would do it. They'd pay a recurring $10 a month fee. And that's their way of showing their support for what we do here at Herb Rally. But yeah, it's basically an online community. Classes are inside. I want to say there's like 70 classes in there now. They range from like 10 minutes to 2 hours. And there's a herbal community discounts, all the like the standard stereotypical community stuff.
So you can like create a username and go and interact with other people in there?
Yeah, I don't know if there is actually a username component, but you definitely register and you definitely use your name. But yes, there's our community component right now is a private Facebook group, which is, I know, lame. And eventually someday, hopefully the technology that we have, that we use will expand to include a community component. But yeah, it's mostly just classes and all that other good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's one of the best aspects of Facebook is the group.
Yeah.
The group.
Totally. Do you have a private Facebook group too? Or?
It's not private. Okay. Public one. And we just have so many projects.
Yeah.
Totally. I feel you on that.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we do have a group. Yeah. I guess also before I wanted to ask you some of your favorite plants too. Like what plants are you working with? Some of your like most consistent allies over the years too? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great. The Herb Rally audience hears me say this every podcast episode, but I say oat straw. Mm-hmm. I consume a lot of oat straw, nourishing herbal infusion. Linden, big fan of linden. Nettle. Basically, what I gravitate towards are the nourishing and uplifting. I think my constitution really desires that. We probably all desire that to one degree or another, but the Herb Rally logo is the dandelion. I just find a lot of inspiration from dandelion. We do consume dandelion as well. Say we always actually we use chicory for our coffee, so I won't front. But yeah, interestingly enough, I've been really getting into tobacco lately. I've never really been a tobacco person, but one of the first places when we moved to Appleton that kind of took me in was the cigar shop. So like is the first place that I started building community here. That the YMCA with my basketball crew and then the cigar shop. And I instantly felt like I had family and friends. Mm-hmm. And so just going to the cigar shop, I work there when I'll go there and I'll work maybe one day a week. And it's just this really lovely community. And it's been interesting because I was never really a tobacco or nicotine person. And maybe that's just my newfound addiction talking, but I've really become infatuated with tobacco as a plant and cigars specifically. And I actually was just before this call, I just was placing an order for tobacco seeds. I'm going to grow them. Jeez. And I'm going to an event tomorrow at the cigar shop where they're going to actually hand roll one right in front of us and show us like the wrapper, the binder, the filler. And like, it's just a really fascinating process with a rich history. And so it's just like, that's top of mind right now. And I know that might be taboo in the herbal community, but, or maybe it's not, but it's just, it's very like, it seems anti like nourishing and calming, but I find it calming, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a sacred plant and it's amazing to grow. We usually have some tobacco plants in our garden and we use the leaves for offerings to land spirits and other spirits and ancestors and things like that.
It's one of the best plants for that. Mm-hmm. The especially in the US and like North America, that's traditionally one of the main offerings to land spirits and when you're harvesting plants, sure.
Beautiful.
But
yeah, it really is. And I'm glad I brought it up because I was a little scared to bring that up. But I'm glad to hear that you two grow it. And I'm glad to hear that it is it thriving in your climate? Because okay, awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, so you can definitely grow it in Wisconsin.
And we're actually now we're growing more the rustica. There's just like a couple species.
The rustica, the Oneida tobacco.
Yeah, that's the rustica or rusticana. Yeah, it's the one with more it's more ceremonial. It's not as mild and easy to smoke, but it's a good, they're both really, we've grown both species up here and they both grow pretty well. It's kind of like tomatoes. You got to feed them a lot and then they just like grow really fast.
Yeah. They get pretty tall, don't they? Like 5 feet maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Ours usually get like 4 feet.
Those are the ones are smaller. Mm. The big, the like the gold dollar ones.
Those can get huge.
Yeah, huge leaves. And they'll get like 7 feet tall. You know.
I'm so excited. Yeah. Like just going down this rabbit hole and I'll have to look more into the ceremonial aspects. I don't know too much about that, but it really does feel ceremonial in a way when I'm smoking on it. So, but yeah, absolutely.
And also to me, makes sense, like the cigar in a way is a lot more of a ceremonial way of smoking than like a cigarette you get from like a pack of cigarettes and there's all the chemicals in it and everything.
Totally.
Like a cigar is more like a ritual, like you're appreciating it, you're communing with it. It's made out of like the wrapper is made out of tobacco.
It's like fermented.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, they'll last me like an hour long. So it's not like a quick, like you said, like a 5 minute cigarette or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what an interesting person you are, Mason.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
You can call me weird. It's fine.
No, you're not weird. You have a diverse interest and you're so open-hearted and open-minded to learning new things and new experiences. And you're a dog sitter, work at a cigar shop, an herbalist, you're just doing it all. So it's really, really great to be able to connect with you and talk with you more. And I hope you do come visit New York.
Yes.
We would love to have you. We have a guest room here or a mini school
bus.
Amazing. You could
we'll kick it on the school bus. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And so where can people find you?
Yeah. So herbrally.com or @herbrally on all social networks, including TikTok. I want to say we've got like 4 videos on TikTok. But yeah, I would also like to say YouTube, just like y'all, we have a YouTube channel as well. We've been coming out with anywhere from 2 to 5 videos per week. So we've been really active. Yeah, we've been active on. So yeah, that's kind of the long and short of it.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you so much, Mason. This has been a great talk. So thanks for doing it.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really excited to publish our episode as well.
Yay.
Yeah.
Swapcast.
That's right.